Okay, so now it's here. So that's the schedule. We've got games. We have times. We have dates. It feels good. It's hard a little bit to do this with, you know, seeing over 9,000 cases a day in Florida and just completely ignore that. But let's just do that for this segment at least. What was your first thought when you saw the schedule?
My first thought was probably that Raptors-Celtics game, that's the fourth game for the Raptors, is pretty much the only important one. I know people looked at it and saw how hard the schedule is and how easy it is for some teams and things like that, but really it's going to come down to there's nothing meaningful for the Raptors to play for other than locking up that two seed to make sure that they get one of Brooklyn or Orlando in the first round. And if they beat Boston in that game, they don't statistically clinch it, but in all likelihood, they lock it up. So, there are some good tests there, and I think it's a good schedule to get the Raptors kind of playoff ready, even if some of those opponents are not, like when they draw Milwaukee's going to be locked into a spot. So maybe they're not getting Milwaukee's best, but I think it's overall having a tough slate heading into the playoffs is probably what you want if you're not a team that's too concerned about, going 7-1 during the stretch. I think the Raptors can get by with 4-4 and just be fine.
Yeah, and in your piece you talked about the numbers, being, I think it's 88% the Raptors' chance of finishing second in the Eastern Conference with the schedule and the 8 games remaining. But you mentioned it, how meaningful are those games against the Bucks and the Lakers going to be? And I guess it matters where you face them on your schedule. Like, both teams have even bigger leads on the second-place team in both conference. So, like, it's only going to be a couple of games for those teams before they actually mathematically clinch top seed. And it doesn't matter. Overall, top seed doesn't matter. There's no home court advantage between those two in a potential finals matchup. How do you see those playing out? Like, because there is an element of, hey, man, you got to get ready for the playoffs. You only got 8 of these things. We haven't played in months and months and months. How many games are you actually resting Giannis for an entire game in the pandemic times? Like, how do you see those games playing out?
Yeah, it's tough. I think if you're the Lakers or the Bucks, you really are treating this like a pseudo preseason. And I don't know if that means that guys sit out games entirely. Like, I'm sure it's on the table. Every team has one back-to-back. I'm sure it's on the table in those scenarios. But, I don't think you're going to see Giannis go past 30 minutes in any of these games. The Raptors get the Lakers early enough. It's the Lakers' second game and the Raptors' first game that you might see the Lakers still do, like, at that point, doing, like, something close to a regular rotation because they're trying to get guys up to speed. So I don't think there's any break there with the Lakers game. But by the time the Bucks game rolls around, Budenholzer might be in protect my guys mode. One thing Nick Nurse talked about on David Aldridge's podcast last week, even from the Raptors' perspective, is in those 8 games, he's got to get 17 guys ready because you don't know if injury is going to strike, if matchups dictate changes, if someone gets COVID. He's trying to get all 17 guys ready over 8 games. So I think you're going to see some teams try to use it for that as well. And it's not just about, protecting Giannis or protecting Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol. It's about, can you get O'Shea Brissett some minutes so that if you have to call on him in the playoffs, it hasn't been 5 months since he played last. So I think you're going to see some teams managing like that too. So, especially because, like you said, there's no home court advantage that we know of yet. And if there is, it'll probably be small. So a lot of these seeding differences aren't going to make a ton of difference in the world. So I could definitely see teams taking a preseason approach throughout all 8 or at least in a couple of those games.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about that yesterday too, the idea of, coaches trying to look at their bench a little bit deeper, especially the good teams. And just like because of the injury concerns and you like you said, the COVID potential, but also that we basically just had an off season, right? That there's going to be guys who show up to this thing and they're going to say, hey, I've actually been working on a 3-point shot. Like, this is something that you wanted me to do all season and now I can do it. And maybe you're not the 11th guy on a bench anymore. Maybe you actually have the potential to move up and play some meaningful minutes. And I am curious to see how coaches treat that. And whether they just decide this is an extenuation of the regular season and we're playing our guys, or if there's a little bit more liberal usage of, look, this guy showed up better than we're treating these 8 games, like you said, like the preseason or like a training camp, and that there's actually going to be jobs opening up for this and that you could actually see real changes on the fly.
Yeah, and I think the Raptors are an interesting case study in that because, like, I don't think there's any question as to who their top 7 are. I think everyone knows that. But, you know, you're going to, especially in this relaunch scenario, you're going to want to have a playoff rotation that's deeper than seven guys. And, you know, maybe by the time you get to the second round, that's down to eight, eight and a half. But the first, through those eight games, through that first round of the playoffs, like, you might be going 9, 10, 11 deep to try to get enough guys involved and keep minutes reasonable. So if you're a Terrence Davis or Patrick McCarr or Chris Boucher or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I think you are going to have that opportunity to show, you know, if you're Rondae and you've been promising that this three-point shot you've been working on is going to come, you know, it would be small samples, obviously, over eight games. But if you could knock down a couple, maybe that changes the faith level in you. If you're Terrence Davis and, you know, you come out and the turnovers are down a little bit and the off-ball defensive attention is a little sharper, you know, maybe that gives you the edge you should have on Patrick McCaw anyway. So I do think, yeah, that's stuff that they're going to be looking at. I don't know if anyone further down the depth chart, you know, I don't know if Stanley Johnson can really elbow his way into a meaningful role, but if those guys are getting minutes, you know, they have to look at those opportunities too. And for some of these guys, as much as this sucks, like this eight-game window for some of these guys, like, if you're Malcolm Miller, for example, and you're a free agent, you know, this might be the last chance you get to get in front of teams, because this offseason there aren't going to be probably like free agent mini camps and workouts and stuff like that. So high leverage across the board for a lot of these guys.
Dude, you just scared the crap out of me with this Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Like,
yeah, I didn't hear that.
Summer 3 2.0, where Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's also a free agent, is going to be like, I got to get my shots up. And all of a sudden, you're watching him just clang a bunch from distance. He's like, don't worry, I've been working on this. I swear it's going to come. I'm good on that.
He hired a shot doctor at some point, and you know, I don't think he's ever going to be allowed to take one of the above-the-break threes again without getting immediately yanked from the game, but if he can knock down that corner one, who knows? Yeah, I'm sure Devlin's got the call ready to throw it back to the Amir Johnson days.
Yeah, no, I'm good. That reminds me of Ben and I love whenever it's the Major League Baseball offseason, we do the who decided to finally get a pitching machine? Who decided to get LASIK? You know, who, like, I'm going to start to take walks. I don't know if you can just start to take walks in the middle of your career. I'm not sure if you can do the Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, have a completely broken shot, get a shot
in
doctor.
In 4 months. Yeah, you need a shot surgeon.
Yeah, exactly. So the other part of this, the big part is just, you know, and it's basically what we've been doing here, kind of skirting around it with, you know, who could come back and who could win a job and what is this going to look like in terms of games is – do we even really take much from the Raptors' regular season? Like, they didn't have a very good record against good teams. Now, all of a sudden, they're facing six really high... I mean, Memphis, I would even almost throw in as seven really quality opponents. And they're going to be potentially facing some weird rotations, looking at some stuff differently. Like, what are you confident about with this group moving into this thing, saying, well, actually, I'm going to be able to apply this regular season to this stretch run and playoffs in Orlando?
Yeah, I think you look at it as a big opportunity if you're Nick Nurse to, you know, like you said, I think they were 11-14 against teams above 500, and they had a positive net rating despite that. So, you know, they outscored those opponents. They just, some of those tighter games didn't go their way. But yeah, that's always a concern. So I think you look at this as an opportunity. And I think if you're looking at what you need work on and what you do well, the most encouraging thing is that their defense held up against the very best teams in the league. So if you know, obviously the defensive rating is a little higher because you're playing better teams. But if you were to rank all the teams in the league, okay, this is how their defense was against the bad teams. This is how the defense was against the good teams. The Raptors come out looking really well. So not a ton of concern that their defense can't keep them in games and keep them in series, but it's that half-court offense where they've really got to hope that they can make some progress. And some of that is on, you know, health, obviously. It's harder when Marc Gasol's not out there, Kyle Lowry's not out there. Some of it is Pascal Siakam's growth, where he's this tremendous transition scorer, but he didn't get a ton of pick-and-roll ball handler reps outside of, you know, the crunch time of games. And the Raptors, you know, half court, I think their half court offense ranked 18th in the league in terms of points per possession. So, you know, you can't really, the first round of the playoffs, you'd be fine. But once you get down to a final eight in the league and every defense you're going against is a good one, you can't have a half court offense that gums up like that. You can't rely that heavily on your transition game alone. So that's the big area I'm looking for. And I think the big area the Raptors need to take strides is, you know, it's one thing to get stops and run and use your second unit to kind of create that chaos and easy points, but these games are going to grind down. We saw it last year how often these, you know, entire quarters that sometimes come down to there's 5-6 seconds left on the shot clock, and what can you get And that was the Raptors' biggest weakness in the regular season. And I think, you know, I think we talked about coming into the season that that was probably going to be their biggest weakness. So no surprise there. But that's the biggest thing I'm looking for in these eight games is can they get some stuff going, you know, in the half court, and can they do it? They had a good crunch time offense. Their crunch time offensive stats were strong, but that's a tiny sample, and you know, you want to see that over entire quarters for sure.